Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by High Caliber Millwrights. This is the Bald-Faced Truth.
Just looking at the Blazers jerseys that have been retired over the years, nothing says small time like retiring 12 jersey numbers when you only have one championship. We got to do better. We got to start taking jerseys down, calling people back. Hey, sorry. We need to unretire that number. Is anybody ever unretired a number? That should happen. Stuart Mandel is the editor-in-chief at The Athletic College Football, to be exact. The Athletic does a terrific job. Great writing, deep dives. Stuart Mandel, king among them, and he joins us now. What was it like to be in that stadium last night?
John, it was surreal for a couple of reasons. I mean, first of all, you were with me in that stadium recently, twice, I believe, to the upper decks tarped off, and there's 30,000 people in the stands. And yes, there are a few empty seats, but for the most part, this is a packed stadium full of Alabama and Clemson fans. And then, you know, football-wise, I've watched a lot of Nick Saban Alabama games over the last 12 years, and I've never seen anything like that, not just lose, but just get completely dominated. You know, it was. You look up that scoreboard, 44-16, still hard to believe, even now.
Saban afterwards said that he didn't feel like he prepared his team very well. He'd never been down 28 at Alabama. Do you buy that this was coaching, or was it Clemson had better personnel or some blend?
Well, I think Clemson, at the very least, is the rare team they ever played that had comparable talent. You know, Georgia would fall into that as well, and they've had some very close games with them. But as I wrote this morning, Clemson and Alabama, to me, are now the two superpowers. And when that's the case, when you're playing a team with comparable talent, yeah, coaching decisions often make the difference. I do think that he realized there was a vulnerability there with his secondary going against their receivers. He said that afterward. And as a result, I think you saw their offense panic a little bit, especially, going for deep in their own territory on fourth down and getting that terrible fake field goal call. It just told me that from a very early point in the game, he didn't have much faith in his defense and felt that he was going to need to score a lot of points to win.
Tua did not play his best game. Why do you think that is?
I don't have a great theory on that other than, Clemson's got a, arguably one of the two or three best defensive coordinators in the country, in Brent Venables. I'm sure he had a lot of stuff, a lot of wrinkles in that game, and it caught him early, with those two interceptions. And it just seemed like at that point, he's faced so little adversity this season that at that point, he just didn't recover. He's still a supremely talented quarterback who, when he's clicking, is very hard to stop. But it just seemed like the two interceptions took that confidence away, and neither he nor that Alabama offense were the same after that.
We're talking to Stuart Mandel, editor-in-chief at The Athletic. I saw your tweet this morning. You were in Starbucks. Have the orange, Clemson orange, has that gone home yet?
I've not seen any Clemson orange this morning. To be fair, there's been a lot of jokes, a lot of criticism about San Jose and Santa Clara. They did all they could. You can't control the weather. There's awful weather here this weekend. Very uncharacteristic, in fact. Causing them to have to cancel a concert. But when that media shuttle turned the corner to Levi's and you just saw all this orange and crimson and just people who clearly traveled from far away to come here, I think all in all, they did their best and they pulled it off.
Stuart Mandel with us of The Athletic. All right, so, you write about Alabama and Clemson, and we've seen this movie before. We may see it again. Is this a pivot point for Alabama? Does Nick Saban need to change something in order to keep pace? Does he fade away, or does he come right back next year with a vengeance?
They're going to have that whole offense back next year, with Tua, the skill players. They're going to be very good again. I think, if anything, what last night showed us is what happens when mean, everybody's always been amazed that he could lose assistant coaches every year and it never phases them. But to me, last night was in many ways showing the contrast between a Clemson program that's had the same coordinators for 5 or 6 years and has very little staff turnover, and Alabama, which goes through it every year now, they're going to have yet another new offensive coordinator next year with Mike Loxley going to Alabama, going to Maryland. But you say that he needs to change something. I think what he could really use right now more than anything is the stability to have most of the staff stay intact for one. I think that would, you know, something that his players would really benefit from.
I know Mario Cristobal at Oregon is trying to go, you know, he's been talking about it for a year. We want to get bigger. We don't want to look like a Pac-12 team anymore. And I looked at that game last night. I'm watching on TV. Those were not Pac-12 teams. You know, Pac-12 is nowhere near that. Can a Pac-12 school, though, steal and replicate the size in the way that it looked to me like they were playing Pac-12 football from years ago? Like, you know, the SEC and ACC have moved to... They look like Oregon from 2011, except with bigger, better athletes.
That's what's scary about those two teams right now is that they're still holding all the great defensive linemen. That hasn't changed. But now they've also got all these first-round receivers and running backs. So, you know, they're, like you said, it's a great comparison. You know, maybe Chip Kelly-style offense or whatever analogy you want to use. But they're still very good on defense. So, you know, I think for Mario Cristobal, I think there's something to be said for obviously becoming a more physical football team, and he has a really good quarterback, so he can theoretically, he didn't see it in the bowl game, he should be able to score some points. At the end of the day, those SEC, ACC teams are always going to be an advantage because that's where athletic, huge and athletic defensive linemen are hugely compensated. Just look at any NFL roster, where the defensive linemen come from. You know, the highest percentage by far is from the Southeast.
Stuart Mandel with us, the editor-in-chief of the college football, the athletic college football. Stuart, the AP Top 25 final poll comes out. I started looking at it, and I go, okay, if I'm setting up a playoff, how many of these teams do I want to see play in it? If I make you commissioner, all other things are out, Stuart gets to decide. How far down on that top 25 do you want to go in allowing teams into the playoff?
Well, from a purely competitive standpoint, I'm fine with 4. I don't, you know, there's yet to be a year where I felt like somebody that wasn't in the 4 was actually the best team in the country, and there was some big injustice they got left out. Ohio State fans obviously wish their team had gotten a shot this year, but it was hard to justify it based on their season. So that's from a competitive standpoint. I think where I'm starting to feel a little bit of a lean toward the 18 playoffs is just because of the dominance of the Southeast. It doesn't feel like a national event right now. The Pac-12 has nothing to do with it. The Big Ten keeps having nothing to do with it. And so those fans aren't as engaged in the college football postseason. So, you know, if you go to 6 or to 8 with automatic champions, that turns it into more of a national event. But I don't think it really, you know, obviously there's no way to know this, but I don't think it would really change considerably who wins the national championship.
Does the discussion on Nick Saban change after last night? Because I heard people nationally saying he's the best coach ever. Let's anoint that now. And then after the game, people going, well, hold on. You know, he had a deer in the headlights kind of look in the fourth quarter.
Well, he's still the best coach of all time. He still has 6 national championships. I think that the fact that they never lost a game in 12 years by more than 2 touchdowns. But the fact that this happened, it was almost like coming back to earth a little bit, like, oh, the guy's actually human. This can actually happen to him. It would take, you know, at least, I think, 2 years of more. You know, either they finally have a 9-3 season or they get to the playoff and get blown out again for us to feel like this is really shifting, like this is really the end of the dynasty. At the end of the day, they were 14-0, and if they had won the game yesterday, everybody would say, saying, this is the greatest team of all time. I don't think all of that went away with one game.
Stuart Mandel, The Athletic. All right, what do you do now? Where do you turn your focus in your coverage?
Well, we've got a lot of kind of season postmortem coming out here in the next week from all of our writers who cover the various teams. Signing day in early February, it'll be here before you know it. And then spring football starts for a lot of schools as early as early March. So everybody sometimes asks me, oh, what do you do all offseason? You'd be surprised how little of an offseason there is. Right now, we got to figure out who's going to be doing a season right now.
Yeah, what do you make of that? Is you know, it feels like he's gone, given that, you know, he the minute that Lynn Swann said you couldn't interview, and he started interviewing, everybody went, okay, that's moved on. How bad is that for USC?
Yeah, it's really bad because when the announcement was originally made that he was going to have Clay Helton to come back, and it was extremely unpopular, fans were really, you know, turned on Clay Helton. And Cliff Kingsbury was the one name probably that could realistically be available. They would say, okay, yeah, let's give this a chance. This is a reason to be excited. He's gone, and I don't know if there's anybody else like that. I mean, obviously, there are good offensive coaches in college football, and I'm sure they'll spend a lot of money and they'll get somebody who's got a track record. But Cliff is a rock star right now, because he coached the two hottest quarterbacks in the NFL right now, Tyler Holmes and Baker Mayfield. So I don't know who you can get that would give the fans that same kind of jolt of confidence. I think they go right back to feeling like this is just kind of delaying the inevitable with Clay Helton.
Stuart Mandel, you're the best, man. I appreciate you.
All right. Thanks, John.
You take care. There he is, the Athletics editor-in-chief of college football. Let's talk about Nick Saban as the greatest. I think there's danger in declaring greatest ever, especially while they're still coaching. Because you can't, like, there's some things that could happen that would remove the greatest ever tag. And by the way, we're so prone to doing this. Everybody, and I'm alive at this era, okay, so I'm indicting myself as well. But we're all inclined to declare what we're watching as the greatest ever. That's why those stupid lists come out of like the 100 greatest athletes of all time. And I know Sports Illustrated one time put a list out and they put Secretariat on there. I'm like, that's a horse. They're like, it's an athlete. I remember one time I was covering the Jim Thorpe Classic. It was a game held in Colorado to begin the season. I believe it was Colorado played Fresno State in a season-opening game in like 1999. It was the Jim Thorpe Classic. It was the first football game of the year, and it was dubbed the Jim Thorpe Classic, and it was on ESPN and all that. And I remember going around at the news conference for the game and asking players on both teams, do you know who Jim Thorpe is? None of them knew. Nobody knew who Jim Thorpe was. First of all, bad job by the bowl, because they should have handed out on day one a video or something. Sit your team down, let them know the history of the game so you can know who Jim Thorpe was. Because Jim Thorpe was on the list of like the 100 greatest athletes of all time. This was his football game in his memory and his honor. And the two teams playing in it were like, I don't know. But they knew who Michael Vick was. So it's like, what are you watching? And what are you coveting now that really will hold up over time? Like Tom Brady, greatest of all time, pretty sure that's going to hold up for this generation or this era of NFL football. LeBron, that ought to hold up. But it's true that LeBron versus Michael Jordan debate always comes down to what you saw. Like, you know, you tell me, you go back and you can look at, you know, you tell me, greatest singer of all time. Who is it? Greatest performer, greatest concert performer of all time. So Michael Jackson? No? Come on, Michael Jackson has to be in that conversation. Greatest performer of all time. But I'm telling you, if you 10 years from now are asking who's the greatest performer of all time, you know what you're going to get? You're going to get everybody. Nobody's going to be talking about Michael Jackson because nobody's seen Michael Jackson. Alabama Adriana, greatest concert performer of all time is?
In what decade or?
Right, you just tell me.
Okay, probably Michael Jackson, but only because you just said him. I would have probably said like Justin Timberlake or something.
Yeah, if you go back to like 1989, you would have got Rod Stewart. You would have got Madonna.
Yeah, I could see Madonna.
Okay, you would have got 1960s, late 1960s, people would have said Jimi Hendrix.
Or the Beatles, maybe.
Or the Doors, the Rolling Stones.
Freddie Mercury.
Bruce Springsteen probably owned the late 70s to mid, late 80s, maybe.
The Grateful Dead.
yeah, well, but I just think The Beatles would have been an answer at one time. Garth Brooks might have been an answer. Elvis Presley might have been an answer. Billy Joel, Elton John. I mean, you look at the best-selling of all time. But right now, today, who is currently performing? Who is the greatest concert performer? You tell me. Like, I'm looking right now and going, okay, would it be Bruno Mars? Like, right now?
Also,
in concert,
you could say Travis Scott because he's been selling out every location he's gone to.
503-417-7575. You speak for yourself and tell me the greatest concert performer of all time is ... And I'm going somewhere on a sports angle with this, but you're going to help me get there. I promise I'm going somewhere with this, but depending on who you ask, if like I ask you who is the greatest concert performer as a musician of all time, you might throw out, if you're a younger person, Bruno Mars. You might do that. Hey, I got a condo in Manhattan. Baby girl, what's happening? You and your ass invited. So gone and get to clapping. Go pop a phone. Certainly got a little bit of Michael Jackson in it for me, but you might even get a Michael Jackson. For me, that's tough to beat. Like, Michael's tough to beat just because of my age. See, I'm talking sweet spot. And again, if I ask you who the greatest concert performer of all time is, and maybe if you're a touch older than me, or maybe you have a different music preference than me, you might even say it's Bruce Springsteen. Seen Bruce Springsteen in concert, Alabama Adriana?
Nope.
That's because you're too young and you're also not from New Jersey. So there's a little bit of geography there. If I asked you who the greatest concert performer of all time is and you answered Madonna, necessarily you'd be wrong, but I also could probably tell you something about your age, maybe even your gender. I think women are more inclined to say Madonna than men. Am I wrong? Well, maybe men are. Peter, what's up, man?
Not a thing, John.
You're editorializing without saying a word.
That's how I do.
You got big eyes over there. You like Madonna?
Not so much.
Not your thing.
My dad, when I was a very young boy, when that record, when Like a Virgin came out, I remember her being on MTV and he just went, well, she's going to be famous. And he was right.
What about Whitney Houston?
That's solid. That's also from my demo. Whitney had pipes.
Oh, yeah.
Whitney could sing. Like, it's such a tragedy.
Yeah. Have you seen the documentary on her?
No, I think it's going to be sad because I don't want to see her like that. I want to remember her like prime Whitney.
Yeah. I mean, it's good though.
I think when she met Bobby Brown, it just kind of went, bad back or a bad man. That'll hurt you. You don't need that. Whitney could sing though. Could anybody sing like Whitney? Could you pull up a Whitney Houston clip, Peter? Like, is there an artist today who's got a voice like that? Because I thought for a time, like, Christina Aguilera, like, she's just voice. Like, I don't care. Like, Christina Aguilera would probably be, like, 70 years old, and she'll still be like, whoa. Like, she'll be singing it. I'm not even going to try to sing it. But I also think that if I ask you the same question of, like, who is the best team in pro football history? I could also tell you something about your age, because if you say the 85 Bears, I know approximately how old you are, because you saw the 85 Bears and you went, this is it. I'm watching it. This is the greatest of all time. Or if you saw the 72 Dolphins, they went 17-0. Or if you say the 62 Packers, man, what a team. Vince Lombardi, Bart Starr, Jim Taylor, Max McGee. You say that was, that defense held opponents to less than 11 points a game. I know something about your age, your generation. If you say the Patriots from recent history are the greatest of all time, I know something about you. You're probably younger. Let's hear Whitney. I think that that's as patriotic as it gets. What's up?
So in the documentary, they actually talked about this. That was her first run through of that version of the song. She had never practiced it before. It was her first time.
She had pipes, man. Unfortunately, Bobby Brown also had pipes. Different pipes.
Oh, my man.
Just saying. There were a few things that could have derailed Whitney Houston. Okay, when you have that much talent, like that was lined up for her. Very few things that could have derailed her. DJ's in Oregon City. DJ, what's on your mind?
You're talking about concerts. Mine would be Jimmy Buffett. Sold out every concert for the last 30 years.
Then I'm going to say that you're somewhere between 55 and 65 years old.
Yes.
How old?
55.
I'm going to say you have a college degree.
I do not. Military.
Military. There you go. You studied.
Yeah, but I just recently moved here from Minnesota.
Okay, you have a family.
Just wife.
Yeah,
dog.
That's a family. Why is it family?
Wife, dog. Yeah.
You enjoy a cool beverage. On a hot day?
Sure.
See, there's something, I think you can draw conclusions based on how people answer this question. I think I could do the same if you tell me about your favorite sports team. I'm not trying to be psychic here. I just think, like, you know, I could tell his age. Like, because you're not going to get, unless you get, like, it's a weird thing. Alabama Adriana, tell me this is nuts. Let's just say you're out on a Saturday night and you encounter a candidate on The Bachelor. You're in a drinking establishment, and you say, hey, I really like Bass Nectar. That's what I'm into. I like the concerts for this Bass Nectar cat, who is from Santa Cruz, California, by the way. And the person responds, oh, I'm a big fan of Jimmy Buffett. Are you going to relate to that?
Nope.
Yeah, see?
Not even a little bit.
What are you going to think?
Thank you, next.
You're going to go, what are you doing in here at that age, sir?
True.
Do you own this place? That's what you're going to say. But it's true. Like, I'm not saying that somebody's old, but that's just, it is such an indictment of this Nick Saban, greatest thing, coach of all time thing. He's got more national championships than anybody, under this format. All right, the system's a little gamed between LSU and Alabama and how he's won things. It's a little gamed. It's not like NFL titles. It's not like declaring Vince Lombardi or declaring Bill Belichick the greatest of all time. It's a totally different system. I look back at like some of the greatest college football teams of all time and I go, all right, Oregon State that played in the Fiesta Bowl a few years ago, Dennis Erickson never got a shot. Didn't get an opportunity to put that Oregon State team in a playoff. If Oregon State had been in a playoff, would Oregon State have a national title today? They might. And they would have been in the college football playoff. So I think we got to be careful with Nick Saban. Like Nick Saban, phenomenal coach. Right guy, right program, right era. Man, did it line up for Nick Saban in Alabama and LSU as well. And Dabo Sweeney, phenomenal job at Clemson, overcoming some of the obstacles to get to recruit players that are on par with Alabama. And man, did he keep his staff together. And wow, he beat Alabama in convincing fashion in that national title game. But let's be careful with talking about the history of college football and Nick Saban and Dabo Sweeney and guys that are walking around like sounding like boxers. Remember how boxers will come in and be like, we're the greatest of all time. This is it. It's undisputed. And now you've got college football coaches who are doing the same damn thing. Does he not sound like a boxer?
To be able to go out 15-0 and truly be the best ever. You know, there was a lot of talk about best ever all year long. We were never in that conversation. But tonight, there's no doubt.
Who's the greatest heavyweight champion of all time? Answer me that question, I'll tell you how old you are. Who's the greatest boxer of all time? If you say, oh, Sonny Liston was the greatest boxer of all time, you're older than me. If you say Muhammad Ali's the greatest boxer of all time, I'm not going to argue with you. He is. He's the greatest boxer of all time. But I think you'll get some Mike Tysons. I think you'll get some Rocky Marcianos. I think nobody's going to say Jack Johnson, who is so ahead of his time in so many ways that, you know, it's, you're not going to answer that the same. Because why? Because we're biased. It's bias with what we see and what we know, and that's okay. That's what sports is. That's what the debate is. But let's be really careful. Your phone calls, 503-417-7575. I want your greatest performers. I want your greatest teams of all time, your greatest coaches of all time. Answer some questions. Tell me what you've seen that is the greatest of all time, and are you able to step back? Maybe like the players in that game I was talking about couldn't do. Because I'm looking at Jim. I never saw Jim Thorpe play. But I seen and read about Jim Thorpe, and I'm like, wow, that dude played across sports, in the Olympics, in professional football. He did it all. And we say he's a throwback, but he's really not, because now we are seeing players who are Olympic-caliber athletes that are participating in multiple sports. It happened. Bo knows. Deion Sanders. It happened again. History repeated itself. And yet we declared these guys better than Jim Thorpe. I think it's debatable. 503-417-7575.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.